It's 6 past 12 and 87 degrees in Santa Fe as At Noon continues from KSFR News on Tuesday, July 23rd. Coming up to this hour, what to do about allegations of financial fraud in New Mexico. The state auditor says the answer is to look into it. But Hector Balderas tells us he's being stonewalled by a state agency. New Mexico's economy remains mired in a no-growth mode. Could more home businesses help? Senator Tom Udall thinks so, and he has new legislation to help make it happen. Santa Fe's police department has come up with a new way they hope will further cut the rate of burglaries in the city. We'll find out what it is. I'm Bill Dupuy, back with those stories. 60 Seconds with Christopher Hagan and more after we look at headlines. New Mexico State Auditor says he's ready to go to court to get the State Human Services Department to hand over to him an independent audit the agency conducted into possible Medicaid fraud. Hector Balderas tells KSFR News that a judge had ordered the Human Services Department to give the independent audit to him for review by yesterday, but the agency refused. Balderas says the Human Services Department has 2 weeks to explain to the court why they ignored the judge's order. More on this coming up. As the state Supreme Court mulls over the question of gay marriage in New Mexico, the state attorney general says banning it may be unconstitutional. The high court asked the attorney general, Gary King, for his advice after two Santa Fe men were denied a marriage license by a county clerk. King told the court that state law neither permits nor denies same-sex marriage. He says banning it flies in the face of equal protection guarantees. The Moody's credit rating agency may be on the verge of downgrading Santa Fe's bond rating. Today's journal Santa Fe reports the agency's review is still underway, while they also look at Santa Fe County and Las Vegas. Moody's says the city of Santa Fe has a troubling ratio of pension liabilities in relation to operating revenues. Santa Fe's finance director says their calculations are skewed because Moody's has only considered general fund revenues, not the entire operating budget and all revenue sources. Santa Fe police have charged 52-year-old Saveto Lujan with rape after the man confessed to having sexual contact with at least two underage female victims. Lujan has served as a youth basketball coach in Santa Fe, as well as a youth football coach in Pecos. He's being held on a $100,000 cash-only bond at the Santa Fe County Jail. As police continue their investigation, other possible victims have come forward with more charges expected against Lujan. The Santa Fe New Mexican has a new editor. Ray Rivera is replacing the just-retired Rob Dean, who stepped down after 21 years. Rivera takes over the post after his most recent stint as an investigative reporter for the New York Times. Along with work for other publications across the country, Rivera has prior experience with the New Mexican, working for that paper in the mid-90s. Some New Mexican may have missed the chance to get a genuine gold bar at a bargain price. The state tax department has taken off the list a 7-pound gold bar from the list of items to be auctioned off this weekend. KRQE-TV reports a family claims it belongs to them. The bar is estimated to have a value of $100,000 in the open market. The state is auctioning off thousands of other items from safe deposit boxes at Saturday's auction of unclaimed property in Albuquerque. This weekend, we'll see a new sports event at Balloon Fiesta Park in Albuquerque. That's when the U.S. Boomerang Association holds its national tournament and exposition. The 3-day event will feature 7 competitions, including long-distance throws, as well as events for accuracy, endurance, maximum time in the air, and trick catching. In weather for Santa Fe, it's a warm 87 degrees. Near 90 for highs today, a 40% chance for rain. Much the same happens tomorrow. And on Wall Street, checking stocks at noon, the Dow Jones is up 42 points at 15,588, but the NASDAQ and the S&P 500 are both down. More coming up.
Support comes from New Mexico Educators Federal Credit Union, where the more you participate in your not-for-profit financial cooperative, the more money you earn. For details on Earn Your Return, go to nmefcu.org or visit their branch on St. Michael's Drive.
12:11 on at noon from KSFR News. More now on our top story. Governor Susana Martinez's administration is facing new criticism over allegations of Medicaid fraud. The Human Services Department hired an independent auditor to look into allegations, and they reportedly found wrongdoings in one of the department's programs to the tune of more than $3 million. The agency turned over the audit findings to the state attorney general. The agency, where the fraud allegedly existed, dealt with mental health and substance abuse care. The Human Services Department turned over the audit to the state attorney general, but didn't give a copy to the state auditor, as a judge required them to do. State Auditor Hector Balderas joins us on the line now to talk about this question. You say this is a big-ticket item of millions in taxpayer money that you want to take a look at.
That is correct. The Human Services Department hired an out-of-state consulting firm to conduct an audit of the behavioral health system in New Mexico and declared that 15 vendors had committed nearly $36 million worth of fraud, and they properly referred that over to the Attorney General's office, who has the Medicaid Fraud Unit. And according to federal guidelines, that was appropriate and proper, and then the Attorney General accepted the case for review. Where we hit a snag with HSD is we also, under the Audit Act, have an obligation to audit all the financial affairs of the organization. And we requested a copy of that report because it's so important for us to also examine the risks and properly disclose that $36 million liability in their financial statements, which the users of those financial statements in the audit report that we're required to submit can be the federal government for additional federal funding. It can be the legislature. The cabinet secretary can use that financial audit to better improve our operations. But most importantly, and this is where we have the major constitutional crisis today, it's my belief that the Constitution and the state law requires me to account for every tax dollar that runs through HSD. And so she refused to provide that accounting, even though she had procured and paid with taxpayer money for that report, to provide that audit report to the auditor's office. And at that point, when she rejected providing that information to me, not only did I believe that was a violation of law, I went to the courts. The courts sided with me and issued a subpoena for her to turn over that report to my office. And yesterday was the deadline of which the cabinet secretary did not provide me access to that report.
When you say she, you're talking about Human Services Secretary Sidonie Squire?
That is correct. She was the initial recipient and the person who retained the services for that report. And what we were asking for is to see that report so that our auditors could look at the methodology and then really look at the risks and then properly assess that in our financial audit of HSD. What's kind of absurd about the conflict is not only is this clear in statute, clear in law, I've never had a cabinet secretary obstruct providing financial information to my office. I've developed a strong record in the past of taking on some of the most heinous, controversial cases of fraud. So we really can assist them in reducing their risks. But if this was a corporate case, you would have the SEC moving in so quickly because they're also required to provide a financial accounting on an annual basis, and a true disclosure of all financial information must be accurate all the way up to the CEO level. So not only is this a constitutional crisis, this is really, for me, it's a lack of accountability and transparency that the taxpayers deserve. And really, that's what this legal fight is about. It's important for me to not set a precedent that allows government officials to turn accountability on and off like a light switch. Everybody should be held to the same high standard of transparency. And we really need that as a legal basis for our report anyway, to make sure that we account to the federal and state governments for every tax dollar that's been properly appropriated.
There were some news reports that the governor said, you don't do audits. That baffled some people.
No, I was baffled as well, too, for two reasons. you know, I've also developed a reputation to do bipartisan work. And, you know, we directed the first takeover in Sunland Park with our audit report that we created ourselves and worked with the governor openly on that. So she was very familiar with our process. We worked with the FBI on the Department of Corrections kickback scheme that occurred under both the Richardson and Susana Martinez administration. And when we completed that report with the FBI, we notified her as a courtesy. We've also, on the Greg Solano case, it was our audit report and our work of auditors that worked with Matt Chandler, one of her favorite prosecutors in Curry County. And so the list goes on and on, whether it was the NM Finance Authority case, it was our audit report that was constructed that we worked with law enforcement and then provided the administration and the legislature all the information they needed once the report was public. So it really perplexed me as well that not only do we have a strong record with working with the administration, she knows we audit government, not only every agency, but the most controversial waste, fraud, and abuse cases. We have been both the leader and also the expert, subject matter expert, when it comes to producing high-quality audits, because the Constitution and state law requires that separation of powers. And we also do about 700 audits, which we regulate. An audit report by law cannot be approved in New Mexico without my approval because we certify the audit firms, or it cannot be released unless it goes through an extensive review through my office. So when she says that we don't audit, I really don't have a real good reason why she said that. We've worked with the most elite law enforcement officers at the federal and state level concurrently in a lot of these cases. And so when she expresses concern that we don't audit or that there has to be some secrecy from our office, it's not even founded in law, but it also, it seems like very questionable logic considering our record of taking on some of the largest embezzlement cases. So I don't have any good explanation for the governor's position at this point.
What happens next?
They, because the subpoena was signed by a district judge and she, the district judge, agreed with our position that we are entitled to that financial information, because they blew the deadline, the Secretary of Human Services now, I would assume with her lawyers, has to go explain. She has 14 days from the day we served her to go explain to the judge in district court why it is that she didn't comply with providing access to the report. The audits are intended to help their agency strengthen their operations, comply with federal grant requirements, and ultimately help them do a better job at detecting waste, fraud, and abuse. And so the fact that they're claiming they have a $36 million scandal and somehow they're trying to construct a legal argument to not allow the auditors to come in is something that would never be allowed in corporate America. If this was something that was attempted at the voting booth to deny citizens the right to vote, to me, this is an issue that the citizens of New Mexico should be much more concerned with. It's not an audit crisis. It really potentially is a constitutional crisis in agencies that really should be working together rather than trying to win legal arguments. Taxpayers are paying for this government. They're expending this money, and now somehow they're saying to have a full accounting, full transparency, that I have to somehow now go win a court case is a horrible, horrible message to send to the citizens of New Mexico. So this is a fight that I don't mind delivering. I just think it's very regrettable as a citizen and elected official.
Advocates for mental health and substance abuse care are following this case closely because it affects a great number of vulnerable people, doesn't it?
We should follow this issue closely. I know that there are a lot of citizens in crisis that are beneficiaries as well. That's the other side of the story that I don't want to forget, that we are a service organization that we deal with numbers, but ultimately our findings and our reports are intended to make management and the operations much stronger. And I do think that there's an agency that's in crisis, but it's really about the recipients that are very fragile in this agency. And so I'll be testifying on Thursday at a legislative committee. And I do appreciate the local press covering this issue very closely, because I do think it's something that every local citizen should be concerned with, because if we don't fix this problem, these are students that are needing special health dollars, special services, but these are also students that have to go to our schools, they have to live in our communities, and they're very fragile. And so I don't want them interacting with law enforcement negatively. I don't want them in the Department of Corrections at later years because we couldn't figure out how to create a better system and ultimately deliver service providers in rural areas because our bureaucrats ended up killing each other. We really need to make sure how these federal dollars can flow to the most fragile and at-risk recipients. And really, that's really the tragedy and the story that I intend to really continue to advocate for.
We'll be following that story carefully. State Auditor Hector Balderas, many thanks. 12:22 on At Noon. Santa Fe police have issued a strong string of reports this year about how they've gotten the burglary rate down. Now, as KSFR's Charles Maynard reports, they have a new program called Offender of the Week.
The Santa Fe Police Department has been working hard to curb the rate of residential and other burglaries in town. Now they have a new program called Offender of the Week. Selena Westervelt is with the department.
We've been trying to do it very consistently for about the past month and a half. Depending on how the week goes, it's been kind of busy. So from now on, we will be doing it once a week, but it's been going on for about a month and a half. We're focusing on property crime offenders, so those wanted for burglaries, auto burglaries, commercial burglaries, anything we can do to bring our burglary numbers even further down in the community of Santa Fe.
They're also continuing to publish a monthly 10 most wanted list.
Besides the offender of the week, we also do a top 10 most wanted each month. We've been doing that for the last 3 months. We have the Operation Full Court Press, which targets some of these repeat offenders, follows them through some of their probations, and makes sure and goes and checks on them that they're behaving and doing what they're supposed to within the community. We're also having more communication with the judicial system, so that way we can follow them through the court process and make sure we hand the judge or whoever the prosecutors are any of the extra evidence we can so they get the stiffest penalty possible and spend more time in jail and less time on the streets offending. Monthly, we have a meeting between all the upper brass, the sergeants above and in the department, and we look at the hot spots for that month. So which areas of Santa Fe have been getting hit? Which neighborhoods are most likely to get hit in this upcoming month? Where are we seeing the crime happen? Because in Santa Fe, we have a very interesting demographic where it changes constantly. So you're by the hotel motels one month. The next month, you're in a different area up north. The next month, you're down south. So it just depends on kind of what's trending. And we're really learning who's out of prison or jail and who's in those communities offending. So we're keeping on top of that.
The department's efforts have been paying off.
Yeah, we're seeing our burglary numbers decline. They've declined for the last 6 months straight. And if they keep trending downward to where they have been, we'll see the lowest number of burglaries for 2013 that we've seen since probably 2003. So it's really good news. This does seem to be working. We're still not perfect, but we're working at it.
Summertime is a prime season for burglars.
Yeah, we find that it is. There's more. The weather's nicer, so people are able to be out and about in the evening times, which is just difficult for us. And then people like to leave their windows, cars, and house windows open because they want that cool summer breeze coming in. And that's where we see a lot of our problems.
There's some funds available for those who contact the police with information on wanted criminals.
We do have some Crime Stoppers money, and we do work with Crime Stoppers when it comes to these offenders, especially because they're just so prolific in the community. It kind of depends on which one gets turned in and what they're doing at the time, whether we're able to reward or not.
Selena Westervelt with the Santa Fe Police Department.
The number for people, if they want to report somebody or if they've seen somebody on one of our lists, is 428-3710, 428-3710, and that's Police Dispatch.
For KSFR News, I'm Charles Maynard.
No question that small businesses make up the lion's share of workers in New Mexico, just as they do everywhere. And in New Mexico particularly, home-based businesses are a big deal. But Senator Tom Udall says these home offices have faced IRS tax regulations that are too complex. He says he's doing something to remedy that situation.
I'm committed to doing everything I can to help our state's employers expand and create jobs, especially small businesses. They make up almost 96% of our state's employers, and their success is the key to improving our economy. I've been talking with business owners across the state about ways the federal government can streamline contracting and reduce unnecessary red tape. And as a result of those meetings, last week I introduced two bills to help businesses grow in today's tough economy. My first bill, the Helping Our Middle Class Entrepreneurs Act, would simplify the tax code for business owners who primarily work out of their homes. Many New Mexicans use home offices. The IRS has recognized that the process to claim the home office tax deduction is too complicated and created a temporary fix. My bill would make that permanent.
So the issue for home businesses is that the IRS rules are too complex?
Yeah, the whole idea here is if you're working out of your home and you've explored in the past with the IRS taking that home deduction, then you found out that it can be very difficult. What we're talking about here is they've realized that. They've put in a temporary fix. We're making that temporary fix permanent.
There must be any number of home-based businesses in New Mexico that could benefit from simpler tax rules and probably help the state's economy.
I think that's true. The Home Act, which allows an individual using that home as an office, part of the home as an office, to now capitalize on what the IRS has realized, that they had created some real barriers to doing that. They created a temporary fix. Now our legislation will make the temporary fix permanent, and it'll allow people to much more easily use that home in their office and continue their business activity and grow businesses in New Mexico. That's the real key, and we're talking here about saving money and saving time.
Senator Tom Udall. The late Steve Jobs is still remembered as the genius of computers. Now any number of industries are trying to identify their Steve Jobs. One of them, the yogurt industry. And Stephen Rollott tells us who it is.
Hamdi Ulukaya sold his first pot of strained yogurt in 2007. Last year, his company Chobani sold almost $1 billion worth. But in some ways, the challenge Mr. Ulukaya faced was greater than that of Jobs. Apple was a startup in the new and rapidly expanding industry of personal computers. Mr. Ulukaya was entering a very established market, selling one of the most ancient products in the world. So how did he do it?
I looked at it first as a consumer when I moved to New York. You know, I was looking for a good yogurt to eat, and it's not one. So I ended up making my own because I grew up eating awesome yogurt, which is available for everyone. Everyone grew up with that.
In Turkey, yeah.
And I would start wondering is why this product is not available. And when you find them, why is it so specialty? Why is it in selected stores in New York City?
Because what you do is strained yogurt. And I've got a carton of your yogurt here. We're going to do a taste test.
Okay.
On air. Hamdi. So it's Chobani strained yogurt, and I've chosen the strawberry variety because that's a base flavor.
That's base flavor. Blueberry, strawberry, peach, vanilla. First
one
I launched.
It looks like an ordinary yogurt.
Yeah.
Let me try a bit of this. So it is different from traditional yogurt. It's quite thick.
Mm-hmm.
It tastes very creamy.
Mm-hmm.
It says on the carton that there's no fat at all in it.
Yeah.
So I don't
And it's got very high protein. Because it's strained. 3 liters of milk, it becomes a kilo of yogurt. So the excess water is strained by straining, it's taken out. Just like imagine your mom is making yogurt at home, and then once it makes the yogurt, she makes the yogurt, she puts it into the cheesecloth, and then take the excess liquid out, and it becomes a thick, creamy yogurt base. That's exactly what it is.
Hamdi Ulukaya, the founder of Chobani Yogurt.
And it's 89 degrees in Santa Fe as the old curmudgeon joins us for a minute.
Sometimes something happens and the publicity surpasses anything you could ever imagine. As you know, Santa Fe has been prominently all over the news, not only locally, but nationally and internationally and all over television and the Internet. Places like Europe, Good Morning America, MSN, Yahoo, YouTube. Theoretically, Santa Fe tourism department's dream, but as we are aware, all is not as it seems. The notoriety has not been due to Santa Fe's history, culture, cuisine, architecture, etc. It was because a woman having a diabetic seizure had a fender bender. The police knocked out her passenger window, dragged her out of the car, handcuffed her, and put her face down on really hot pavement. Our tourism department and their marketing people might be having a little trouble with the spin, so here's my suggestion for a new slogan. To borrow from an insurance company, you're in good cuffs with Santa Fe. For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.